Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing? Me? Is it Friday? Please tell me it's Friday. I'm tired. I forgot. Teaching is work. I had all that, like, 2 months where I didn't have to do anything. All I had to do was give exams and stand around. Now I have to teach things. Whose idea was this? All right. Now, it is good to be sort of back in the habit of doing classes, but you know that first week of classes is always going to hit you because you got to meet new people, you have to do all the new things, got 100 different names to remember, so it's a little tiring, but I think once we get into the swing of things, it'll be good. And then it'll be Golden Week, and I have to ramp back up again after that. But anyway, that's, you know, my own little complaint. Oh dear, I have a job I like. Poor me. I hope you're doing well. I hope that you're fine. Things, by the way, here in Japan are probably better than you think by watching TV. If you're watching the media, especially in the US, yes, the whole Fukushima nuclear reactor thing has been jimmied up to a level 7, which is bad. But for people who are outside of that area, it's okay. The rest of the country's doing fine. So we're just hoping that everybody up there gets out or gets better, or they figure out what they're going to do with it, put a giant dome on top of it or something. I have no idea. I am not a nuclear scientist. I am a book reviewer, so why don't we get to that? I did get a correct guess this week, by the way, from Marissa in the U.S. Now, she did not get the exact name of the book, but that's okay, because I don't know how well this book sold. I didn't know how popular it was, so the point is, she did get the topic right, in that this is a book about the first ladies of the United States. So, well done, Marissa. You are correct. You win intense public scrutiny of your life, every aspect of it, for the next, say, 3 years. So this book is called Secret Lives of the First Ladies. It's by Cormac O'Brien. And it's a follow-up to O'Brien's previous book, which was The Secret Lives of the U.S. Presidents, which, while really a fascinating book, it is a topic that's been covered many, many times. In fact, I have two books on this topic, and they both illuminate all the hidden idiosyncrasies, character flaws, shining moments of virtue, and, of course, petty humanity of the 43 commanders-in-chief. It was Abigail Adams who exhorted her husband to remember the ladies, and it seems that's what O'Brien has done. He's given us a nice, concise look at the women of the White House, and yeah, it's a hell of a read. Now, it's very easy, however, to forget first ladies, which is a shame. You kind of pigeonhole them into the space that just reads President's Wife. And really, to do that is to do a great disservice to, frankly, an amazing group of women. Now, a lot of people, for example, remember Hillary Clinton as being this sort of political powerhouse, a kind of co-president with Bill. But she was not the first by any means. Now, when Woodrow Wilson suffered a debilitating stroke in 1919, all access to him was controlled by his wife, Edith. She would let no one in to see him on the grounds that he was very ill and needed absolute peace and quiet. So when someone needed something signed by the president, like, I don't know, a law, Edith would take it, close the door, and come back a few minutes later with a signed document. The question very quickly arose, of course, who's really the president? You know, this book doesn't answer that, because it's more fun to leave that question unanswered. If there are any Woodrow Wilson scholars listening to this podcast, and there may very well be, you can let me know. Here's another, Helen Taft. She's another forgotten first lady, firebrand. Without her motivation, William Howard Taft might have been perfectly happy to be a judge, a very big judge. That wasn't good enough for Helen. From her teenage years, she knew she wanted to live in the White House, and she pushed her husband to make damn sure that he did. Once there, even her husband called her the co-presidentress for the amount of involvement she had in the day-to-day decision-making that went on. She was a woman of boundless energy who was never willing to sit still, and if you like the cherry trees that are blooming in Washington, D.C. right about now, you can thank Helen Taft for that, too. Women like these, which include Eleanor Roosevelt and Jocelyn Carter as well, left indelible impressions on the country. However, of course, not every first lady was so ambitious. Some of them were more populist idols, adored by the public not so much for their works, but because of their personality. The most recent example would probably be Jacqueline Kennedy, who became kind of a media icon as soon as her husband was elected, and maybe Michelle Obama might be fitting into that niche as well, but she, well, we'll see how she works out. Let's not pass judgment first. But there were others before Jackie O, or Jackie K, as she was at the time. My favorite, of course, being Dolly Madison, who threw the best parties in Washington, and she was vastly more beloved than her husband, dour and solid James. It was said that Dolly Madison had no enemies, and even the people who loathed her husband adored her. She stayed in the White House right up until the British showed up at its doorstep and managed to save a few precious items. It's even said that the British commander, Rear Admiral Sir George Cockburn, was more interested in capturing her than capturing the executive mansion, and took her seat cushion from the dining room so that he could come away with something to remember her by. How romantic. And then he had the building torched. After she left the White House and her husband passed away, it was customary for each new president to pay her a visit, kind of gaining an approval from the most loved woman in America. Or take Frances Cleveland, the wife of Grover. Her relationship with her husband would be considered scandalous today. It certainly was in hers. She was 27 years younger than her husband, who had been her legal guardian when she was a child. If that ain't a bit weird. Much to the nation's surprise, he went from being Uncle Cleve to beloved husband. But that little bit of creepiness did not stop the nation from loving her. Once in the White House, she became an early proponent of women's accomplishments. She was willing to meet and talk to anyone, rich or poor. When Grover ran for re-election in 1892, Frances's image was the one campaigners used, not his. And why shouldn't they? In an age before Byzantine copyright law, her name and her image were already being used to sell all kinds of household goods. You ever eaten a Baby Ruth candy bar? It was not named after the baseball player, it was named after the Cleveland's daughter, who was, for her regrettably short life, the most popular baby in America. And then there were the sad stories. The women whose lives in and out of the White House were generally full of misfortune. Jane Pierce is probably the saddest of all of these. She never wanted her husband to be president. Every step that he took forward seemed to result in pain for his family. Their first child died after a few days. When Franklin finally got out of national politics and opened up his own law firm, their second child died of typhus. With only one child left to them, Jane held on to him with a manic grip. His death, the only death in a train derailment short time before Franklin's inauguration, well, that was the last straw. Jane became convinced that God had killed their children so that Franklin could have more time to devote to his presidency, and she spent her days writing letters to the dead boy asking for his forgiveness. She became known as the Shadow of the White House. And no less tragic, of course, was the life of Mary Todd Lincoln, who is best known for being the wife of our first assassinated president. Even before that bad night at the theater, though, she had her share of sorrow. The animosity and hatred that was heaped upon her husband, the terrible strife of a civil war, and the untimely death of one of her sons turned a once vibrant, energetic woman into a hysterical, morbid harridan. She held seances to try to talk to her deceased boy. She harangued the White House staff, and she almost had to be forcibly ejected once Andrew Johnson became president. What's worse, her own son, Robert, eventually had her declared insane and had her committed. She won her freedom, but the animosity between mother and son after that was white hot. I mean, there's so much more. The relationships that these amazing women had with their husbands are well detailed and somewhat surprising. You know, everybody talks about Bill Clinton being such a lecherous dog, you know, a hound dog always after the ladies. He had a little thing in the Oval Office we all know about, but he was not the first president to dally away while he was on the job. Hillary joined a group of very long-suffering women who put up with blatant and repeated infidelities in and out of the White House. Some relationships were partnerships, like the Carters, the Hoovers, and the Tafts, and some couples were just quietly devoted to each other, like the McKinleys and the Clevelands. The First Lady is not an elected position. There is nothing in the Constitution about her, about what she can and cannot do. So the job, such as it is one that each First Lady makes for herself when her husband takes the office. The effects that these women have had on our nation really is immense and should not be overlooked. So if you're interested in knowing more about our presidents, you could do worse than to give a good look at the women who stood by them. Let me give you a quote. This is a quote from Florence Kling Harding, who said of her husband Warren, who another guy who really didn't want to be president but ended up president anyway. She said, "Well, Warren Harding, I have got you the presidency. What are you going to do with it?" So there you go. If you got daughters, teach them to read up on the First Ladies. There's some really interesting stories in there. You know, there's some that I wouldn't model myself after. Like I said, I think it was the McKinleys who basically just had prayer breakfasts, and I think the Harrisons. I think Harrison's wife, Lucy, was known as Lemonade Lucy. They wouldn't serve alcohol in the White House. It was terrible. But there are a lot of very strong, vibrant, active, interesting, and historically significant women who have gone through that house. So take a look, get to know them, And, you know, Michelle Obama is turning into an interesting first lady in her own right. She's pursuing things that are important to her, healthy eating and healthy living. What amazes me, of course, is that there's people who find fault in everything she does. She wants people to eat better, so they say, oh, she's attacking the American diet and the American way of life. The important thing to remember, and that you get from reading books like this, is that people attacking the First Lady for things that she's doing, it's nothing new. It always happens. And as soon as they're out of the White House, everyone will forget, and everyone will say, oh, Michelle Obama, what a wonderful woman. So there. And she had great arms. There's nothing else in here about any First Lady's arms, so who knows. Anyway, that's going a little bit off topic. But it's a good book, and I recommend you check it out. And one of these days we'll talk about the other book, The Secret Lives of U.S. Presidents. Maybe I'll do a double hitter with the other book I've got. We'll see. That's for the future. But for now, I think I should let you go. I'm sure you have something very important to do, a meeting perhaps, or a assignation. I don't know. It's up to you. But next week, I chose this book because I got a really good comment on the blog entry for the last Lost in the Stacks episode, the one that kind of inspired most of the reviews this month, where I talked about women in fiction. I got a very good comment from someone who signed herself off as Rosie, who has a lovely DeviantArt page, that Terry Pratchett is good not only at female characters, because you've got Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg, Captain Angua, Cheery Littlebottom, some really good female characters, but that he does it in a what is really a very efficient way, that he'll take kind of an archetype or a stereotype, and he will mold her, and he will give her flaws and give her ambitions and give her problems that make her more interesting. So I was reading this, and I think she really made a very good point about how Terry Pratchett writes characters that, while being stereotypes, are still interesting to read. So next week, we are going to do a Terry Pratchett book. It's been too long. I don't remember the last one, but it's been too long. It's always too long. Next week's book, it's a Discworld book, of course, and it has to do with kings. I wanted it to be queens, but I didn't have another really good sort of female-centered book ready to put online for you. So, but we've got a flow. So it is Discworld. It has to do with kings. It's one of the earlier books, so you should be able to get this one. And I welcome your guesses, and I'm sure you will be right. The person who gets it right will win a secret birthmark shaped like a crown. I think that's about it. I've got to relax and go to sleep because I got to teach more tomorrow. God, whose idea was this? What was I thinking? Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Stay well, stay happy, and I will see you all next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.